C.W. St. John Nobbs, is a human being. Signed, Lord Vetinari. The other was the letter from Dragon, King of Arms. The footman's eyes widened.
"Oh, I am terribly sorry, Your Lordship," he said.
He stared again at Corporal Nobbs. Nobby was clean-shaven. At least the last time he'd shaved, he'd been clean-shaven, but his face had so many minor topological features that it looked like a very bad example of slash-and-burn agriculture.
"Oh, dear," added the footman. He pulled himself together. "The other visitors normally just have cards."
Nobby produced a battered deck.
"I'm probably busy hobnobbing right now," he said, "but I'm game for a few rounds of Cripple Mr. Onion afterwards, if you like."
The footman looked him up and down. He didn't get out much. He'd heard rumours, who hadn't, that working in the watch was the rightful king of Ankh-Morpork. He wanted to hide a secret heir to the throne. You couldn't possibly hide him more carefully than under the face of C.W. St. J. Nobbs. On the other hand, the footman was something of an historian, and knew that in its long history even the throne itself had been occupied by creatures who had been hunchbacked, one-eyed, knuckle-dragging, and as ugly as sin. On that basis, Nobby was as royal as they came. If, technically, he wasn't hunchbacked, this was only because he was hunched front and sides, too. There might be a time, the footman thought, when it paid to hitch your wagon to a star, even if said star was a red dwarf.
"You've never been to one of these affairs before, milord," he said.
"First time," said Nobby.
"I'm sure your lordship's blood will rise to the occasion," said the footman, weakly.
"I'll have to go," Angua thought as they hurried through the fog. "I can't go on living from month to month. It's not that he's not likeable. You couldn't wish to meet a more caring man. That's just it. He cares for everyone. He cares about everything. He cares indiscriminately. He knows everything about everyone because everyone interests him. And the caring is all general and never personal. He doesn't think personal is the same as important. If only he had some decent human quality like selfishness. I'm sure he doesn't think about it that way, but you can tell the werewolf thing is upsetting him underneath. He cares about the things people say behind my back, and he doesn't know how to deal with them. What was it those dwarfs said the other day? One said something like, 'She feels the need,' and the other one said, 'Yeah, the need to feed.' I saw his expression. I can handle that sort of thing, well, most of the time, but he can't. If only he'd thump someone. It wouldn't do any good, but at least he'd feel better. It's going to get worse. At best, I'm going to get caught in someone's chicken house, and then the midden is really going to hit the windmill. Or I'll get caught in someone's room." She tried to shut out the thought, but it didn't work. You could only control the werewolf. You couldn't tame it. "It's the city. Too many people, too many smells. Maybe it would work if we were just alone somewhere. But if I said, 'It's me or the city,' he wouldn't even see there was a choice. Sooner or later, I've got to go home. It's the best thing for him." Vimes walked back through the damp night. He knew he was too angry to think properly. He'd got nowhere, and he'd travelled a long way to get there. He'd got a cartload of facts, and he'd done all the right logical things, and to someone somewhere, he must look like a fool. He probably looked like a fool to Carrot already. He'd kept coming up with bright ideas, proper policeman's ideas, and each one had turned out to be a joke. He'd bullied and shouted and done all the proper things, and none of it had worked. They hadn't found a thing. They'd merely increased their amount of ignorance. The ghost of old Mrs. Easy rose up in his inner vision. He couldn't remember much about her. He'd been just another snotty kid in a crowd of snotty kids, and she'd been just another worried face somewhere on top of a pinny. One of Cockbill Street's people. She'd taken in needlework to make ends meet and kept up appearances, and, like everyone else in the street, had crept through life never asking for anything and getting even less. What else could he have done? They'd practically scraped the damn wallpaper off the walls. He stopped. There was the same wallpaper in both rooms. In every room on that floor, that horrible green wallpaper. But no, that couldn't be it. Vetinari had slept in that room for years, if he slept at all. You can't sneak in and redecorate without someone noticing. In front of him, the fog rolled aside. He caught a glimpse of a candlelit room in a nearby building before the cloud flowed back. The fog. Yes, dampness. Creeping in, brushing against the wallpaper. The old, dusty, musty wallpaper. Would Cheery have tested the wallpaper?